element to order. We got a few work sessions, introduced some committee bills, and then we're going to get an overview of our meeting tomorrow on Columbia Crossing as the committee administrator has just taken her pen and marked up my hand. And so then we'll be prepared for our meeting with the Senate, the Washington Senate tomorrow. With that, I want to open up a work session on Senate Bill 139. Janet?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 139 was a bill you heard on January 18th that would require a person that's operating a public use airport to provide notice of the closure. There was a fair amount of discussion and testimony in support of the bill, but there were questions about what airport operators thought, and the Airport Managers Association asked that the word permanent be placed in the bill so that it temporary closures would not be required to give the notice. After the meeting, the Department of Aviation, at your request, surveyed the airport owners, and with the letter that's in your packet, that's the letter that they sent out. The results of the survey are also in your packet, supporting the measure. There was some notations to increase the number of days, but the chair and co-chair met and decided that reducing the number of days. So the amendment reduces the number of days to 120 and places the word permanent. These are the dash one amendments. So, Mr. Chair, that version was mailed out to and surveyed and was supported by airport owners that responded.
Okay. Any questions about that?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I contacted the airports in my district, and they didn't like the bill originally drafted, but with the amendments, they were totally fine with it.
Okay. Paul, since Senator Sarr gets up to speed, I'll let you make the motion for the amendment then.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 139.
Okay. Senator George has moved the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 139. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator George.
Chair, I move Senate Bill 139 to the floor with a due pass. As amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator George has moved Senate Bill 139 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Any objection? Sure. Okay. Who's the aviator? Well, you are. I think you're the aviator.
My family does.
Or your dad, I mean, or something. But all right, we'll give it to Senator Larry George. Okay, open up a work session on Senate Bill 219, and again, Janet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As Senate Bill 219 was also heard at the end of January, it would allow the Employment Department to provide information to the Department of Transportation for the purpose of collecting certain debts and delinquent taxes. Such information could include payroll data and names and addresses of employers and employees. The information would remain confidential, and the legislation would prohibit any disclosure by ODOT to any collection agency. There were questions about the use of and how closely kept the Department of Transportation information would be as a result of questions from Senator George. I understand there's been additional conversations with the department that you could speak to. I wanted to also point out we now have a fiscal and a revenue impact statement for the amount of revenue expected. There is somewhat of a discrepancy. The fiscal analysis shows toward the bottom that they think that the revenue may be overestimated because most of the information obtained from the Employment Department would be from individuals, and that's not a large portion of the collection amount, so the department may be able to speak to that. But there is a minimal cost, very little cost associated with adding another state agency to the Employment Department records, and that's what's indicated at the bottom of the fiscal impact statement.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So we're still in the black, but we may not be as much in the black as we thought. Correct, El Mundo, but we're still positive. Senator George, we held that bill so that you could have an opportunity to ask any questions and wanted to get your comments and if that was of comfort to you.
Yeah, the department came to me. We tried to work on some different language, and at some point we decided that it was too difficult to craft it that would really change it. So I told them I was fine with the bill as drafted. They've assured me that they're going to keep the information as tightly controlled as possible. And with those assurances and looking at the difficulty of trying to draft something else, I'm comfortable with the way the bill is now. Thank you very much for the opportunity, though.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion on it?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Stark.
Move Senate Bill 219 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Stark, move Senate Bill 219 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Any objection? Order. Okay. Senator Mona Sanderson, I'll give you that one. How's that?
Lovely.
Okay, let's go into a work session for possible introduction of committee measures. Janet?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's two at your places today. LC 3400, if I can read my scribbling here. It's about a workplace post-accident drug testing. And LC 2865, having to do with taxis and workers' compensation, and that's at the request of the radio cab company.
Okay. I have a funny feeling that those might be going somewhere else anyway.
Sure.
Senator Starr.
I move LC 3400 and LC 2865 be introduced as committee bills.
Senator Starr has moved LC 3400 and LC 2865 be introduced as committee bills. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Okay. Now, we're going to our informational meeting. Again, members, tomorrow we meet at 11:30 at the Port of Portland building downtown with our colleagues from the state of Washington. And so in preparation for that, we've asked for a brief informational hearing just to have us kind of prepped in advance of the meeting itself, so we will sound intelligent on this issue in front of our Washington colleagues. So with that, if I would, members of the department, if they would come forward and
Mr. Chair, while they're coming forward, what about parking down there? What was the...
Janet.
Yes. Mr. Chair, thank you. The port recommends, if you're not coming by light roller bus, to, the parking at the corner of NATO Parkway and Davis is a smart park. And if you take, don't put your little ticket they give you in your window, bring it with you because the port will validate it at the meeting and you'd be able to park there for free.
Just one block, so it's a good place just to park. So
thank you.
And there'll be boxed lunches, but they will be after the meeting. Since this is kind of a very formal thing between the two states, we didn't think you'd want to be eating a sandwich in the middle of it. So the sandwiches will be available after the meeting and before the tour. And so there'll be a few things to nibble on early in the meeting, but the lunches will be after the meeting. And I understand there's a reception, the Northwest Natural Gas building across from the Port of Portland building up on the fourth floor, and that starts at 4:30, but I'm not the detailed person about that. So.
Okay. Thank you, Janet. Welcome.
Thank you. Chair Metzger, members of the committee, good afternoon. I'm Doug Tindall, Deputy Director of the Department of Transportation. With me is John Osborne, who's the project director for the Columbia River Crossing. John's going to do the most of this presentation. I just want to give you a little bit of context about the Columbia River Crossing. It's the crossing itself is a huge project, but importantly, I think it's one of a set of projects that comes out of over a decade of work on the I-5 corridor and making the I-5 corridor work well. The first part of that work was that started in 1995 was a trade partnership work between the state of Oregon and the state of Washington that recognized the region's economic livelihood is dependent on the efficient and safe movements of people and goods. It helped define the role I-5 plays in supporting the ports of Portland and Vancouver. Following the trade partnership was the I-5 strategic plan, commissioned by the governors of Oregon and Washington and signed off by all of the major transportation planning agencies, Metro, the equivalent of Metro on the Washington side is called RTC, CTRAN, which is the equivalent of TriMet, Clark County Transit and TriMet and the cities of Portland and Vancouver, Washington State DOT and Oregon DOT all participated in the I-5 strategic plan. The Columbia River Crossing is actually the third of a list of projects one of which has been completed. That's widening I-5 in the city of Vancouver and Washington. The Delta Park area, which we will begin construction, ODOT will begin construction on in 2008 to eliminate that bottleneck. And then the Columbia River Crossing is the third piece in that. It's a project that has a variety of purposes. It's very common to look at this as a congestion relief, but it's really a huge safety issue, both for vehicular traffic and for river traffic on the river, that we're trying to secure here. And importantly, also, the current bridges are not seismically sound to hold up in an earthquake, which of course could provide devastating consequences in the event of an earthquake significant enough to take them down. So this is a piece I just want to portray for you, that this is a piece of work. It's part of a study that's gone on for more than a decade. It's a critical element. It has had a tremendous amount of depth and breadth of study of various options about how best to address this. And Mr. Osborne is going to bring you up to date on where we are. And tomorrow you'll hear both from the Director of the Department of Transportation, Matt Garrett, and the Secretary of the Washington Transportation Department, Doug McDonald, about where we are, where we're going, and the need for the project. John?
Thank you, Ron. Welcome.
Thank you. Chair Metzger, members of the committee, to build on...
Please introduce your name.
I'm John Osborne. I am the project director representing Oregon on the Columbia River Crossing project.
Thank you.
To build on what Mr. Tindall had said, the Columbia River Crossing project really is a complex bridge, transit, and a highway improvement project that is very large in that it's complete reconstruction of 5 miles of this important facility that we have through the heart of the Portland and Vancouver metropolitan areas. It includes 8 interchanges that provide vital links to the commerce that we have in the region, and it does have components of transit so that we can make sure that what we do build, we can get the most out of, so that as folks have choices about the transit modes that they take, they do have viable options to select from, which right now we would suggest are somewhat limited. So this process...
Mr. Chair,
yes,
can I interrupt? I'm just curious, that last statement you made, the options that folks have today are bus transit. You have I want to say C-SPAN, but it's C-TRAN,
mm-hmm.
and you got TriMet. Folks can ride the bus from Vancouver into Portland, and I believe TriMet goes across, and C-TRAN comes across. How different? I mean, it sounds to me that it's a conversation about something besides bus transit. I'd just like this conversation to be very clear and very transparent when it comes from the department about what the plan really is.
Chair Metzger, Senator Starr, we'll get into this in some depth when we talk about the options. The transit options for this project that have been recommended at this point and not yet adopted by the task force, and John will describe all of that, are for bus rapid transit or for light rail. So it would not be the transit that you cite. It would be a more rapid form of transportation, either bus rapid, dedicated lane, or light rail.
Thank you.
So to build on the process that we've been involved with, we have been looking at how important the corridor is to move trade and to move people within the I-5 corridor. That study evolved into the commission or the panel that both governors supported that came out with the specific recommendations about solutions in the I-5 corridor. That recommendation that came out in 2002 through that cooperative effort recommended that we had 3 through lanes in each direction on I-5, including the southbound through Delta Park, which Mr. Tindall talked about earlier. It also recommended specifically a phased light rail loop in Clark County in the vicinity of the I-5 SR 500 fourth plane and the I-205 corridors. In addition to that, it did recognize that in order to solve the problem, which was is that the demand for the corridor really exceeds what the capacity of that corridor is in all modes, whether it be moving public transportation through the lanes that we have now or whether it be moved freight through the corridor. We had more demand than what we had the ability to serve with the existing bridges. So as part of that recommendation, an additional span or a replacement bridge for the I-5 crossing of the Columbia River with up to two additional lanes for merging and two light rail tracks as well. So that is part of what we're looking at with this particular project and why the transit node is important to us. It also told us to look at the interchange improvements because we needed to look at both operational improvements to help those lanes work better, but to solve the safety problems that we did have in the corridor. The amount of crashes that we have in the corridor is approximately two times what we would expect to similar corridors in urban environments that are built up to standard. And part of the charge of the project is to address those safety elements as we look at a comprehensive solution to crossing the river and making improvements in the corridor itself. It also suggested that the region take a look at capacity improvements for freight rail, which I believe has been done. I know that the state of Washington has recently made large investments in their rail system to the north, and I know that we began some of that with the Connect Oregon work that we just recently have gotten underway, and I know that there's additional energy in that direction. So the recommendations that came out of the strategic plan did result in three specific projects that Mr. Tindall talked about, the widening to the north in Vancouver of I-5 to fix that bottleneck, the Delta Park project that Oregon is nearly underway with, and then this particular project that we are in the formal process of an environmental impact statement. What came out of the strategic plan, as we started with the state of Washington, we began to build on to solve the Columbia River Crossing project, and one of the first things that we did was to establish who the primary partners needed to be in order for proper approval of any documentation we had, but more important, strategically and politically, who we needed to have on board for a comprehensive solution to the corridor. With that, we formed a task force that had 39 members that included and still does include members from both neighborhoods, from governments on both sides of the river, from the folks that actually use the river itself, environmental aware groups, and a very wide range of folks that are all impacted by this particular project. The business community is well represented as well. So with that particular group formed what the problem was that we were going to solve with this project and formally developed the purpose and need statement in the federal NEPA process, and also established what the measurement criteria that we would use for screening the ideas that came in were. 39 out of 39 task force members agreed to what the problem solution was that the project was to go forth and solve. And they also agreed to the yardstick that we would use. Then, as part of the NEPA process, we gathered in information and ideas that looked like that they would help us to meet the recommendations that came out of the strategic plan and to solve that particular purpose. So that's the CRC portion, is to solve the things that specifically in the strategic plan identified we need to fix the congestion, the safety, the mobility problems, and a little bit about the framework that we set up in order to bring folks to a consensus to do that. So with the safety problems that we have and the transit issues that we've talked about, I think the next thing to just highlight a little bit is that the average travel times under the transit scenarios that we have now, looking at the growth that's projected in the metropolitan region over the next 20 years, is going to almost double from the 27 minutes in 2002 to almost an hour by 2020. So that's one of the things that really pique about why transit needs to be a robust part of this conversation. As a side note, there's approximately 66,000 folks from Vancouver that commute on a daily basis or during the week to the Portland metropolitan area for employment. And approximately 12,000 folks a day go in the reverse commute direction. So transit on the express bus services that they have now that have to be part of the congestion would be a good way to be able to address the need of a lot of those folks, particularly that live in the inner city, in the inner city area. Some of the other things that we have to solve with the problem is the lift spans that we currently have. If we have those existing lift spans, how do we deal with that and the river traffic that it impedes and the congestion that, that results from when we have a lift span? It only takes about 10 minutes under normal circumstances to have a bridge lift, but it could gnarl up traffic for as much as an hour. And those impacts are predominantly seen in the downtown regions of Vancouver, being that the real downtown part is right by the bridge. Roadway widths certainly are substandard. We recognize that if we really want to address the safety problems, we also need to address the problems that we have in that there's no shoulders, there's no place for folks to get out of the roadway if they have a breakdown, if they have a flat tire that they go across. It's just there's three lanes that are narrow. One of those gets plugged with it. That's something that we need to take care of as part of the safety fixes as well. One thing to note going back to the bridge lifts is that right now there's a limitation that the Coast Guard is working with us, and that when we have peak congestion in the morning, which generally runs about 4 to 6 hours now, they do allow us to say, hey, folks, the transportation on the surface does take priority during this short window, so we'll not be lifting the bridges. What will happen if we don't do anything, if the projections that we've done so far come to light, is that those peak periods would go, that we have congestion, severe congestion on the facilities, would move from the 4 hour range to almost 12 hours a day. And that part during the middle of the day that the freight folks are now trying to stay out of the congestion and getting their goods and services moved to the restaurants and the shops now becomes something that they can't really depend on with a lot of reliability. And we've heard loud and clear from a lot of the folks that kind of the net impact is that maybe they have to increase warehouse capacity, and those things have real financial impacts to them and their abilities. So how do you balance that with part of, you know, with part of fixing the problem is one of the things that we're also trying to consider as well. So anyway, the congestion is one of the things that we need to address. We'll do that with an increase in capacity, but also trying to take a look at how we can make interchanges work better to make and how we get better connections to and from the ports. We have the Port of Vancouver that has a primary connection through their fourth plane and mill plane connections. There's also the Port of Portland has the marine drive connections, which are vital, and the interchanges that are associated with that are also included with this project. So those are all of the things that we're dealing with. The regional truck freight is projected to increase by about 130% in the next 25 years. So that's one of the things that really helps us to focus on why it is we need to do this project. If we really want to make sure that we're able to solve the problem and make sure that those folks are able to have the connections that they need so that they can remain competitive, we can hopefully be bringing that business in to this region, which does depend so much on the transportation facilities that we have. So going back to the process of where we are with this specific project, After the task force had given us what problem it was that we needed to solve and how encompassing that was, what the comprehensive solution needed to include, and what the yardstick was, if you will, about how we were to measure the ideas that came in, staff did go out. We collected a number of ideas about how to address the transit solution, how to address the river crossing solution, and through a series of doing some engineering work and having a very open public involvement process. We've had a number of workshops. We've been out to a number of neighborhoods, some of them on a number of occasions. We've talked to a number of business and environmental folks in the process. And we came up with three alternatives that basically said that the best thing that for us to do is to replace the bridge with something new, and for the transit solution, put a connection into downtown Vancouver and some point to the north. We don't know yet what the optimum point is. That would come with the next phase of the work. But take a fair look at what bus alternatives would be and what light rail alternatives would be to connect into and leverage the existing system that we already have in Portland. That's what the staff recommendation is. That was presented to the task force in February. It's been out for public comment now, and the task force will decide on what to move forward. That's the next steps in that particular process, which will happen at the 27th of this month. So the next thing to go on process-wise from there is that with the alternatives that we do move into the draft environmental impact stage, we would continue to have dialogue with stakeholders, public comment come in, and as we expand ideas and hopefully come to agreement and consensus amongst the stakeholders in what we term as the locally preferred alternative sometime in 2008, and then go through the rest of the federal process in the NEPA process to be able to come to a record of decision and have a final document by the end of 2008 or early 2009. So with that, the primary structure we're working with is the task force. There's other groups that we do have that are special. There's working groups that have a view towards environmental justice and community and neighborhood concerns. There's folks that specifically focus on freight in their working group. There's folks that look at how we model and how we interact with the modeling that our metropolitan planning organizations do. And also the project development team, which is basically consisted of ODOT and WashDOT, Washington Department of Transportation, key personnel with a number of consultants that help us to deliver the work that we need to on the project. We have federal co-sponsors on this project, and it's a mega project in federal terms. We do have both the Federal Highway Administration and the Federal Transit Administration as part of co-sponsors on the project, which helps us to be able to make sure that the work is best coordinated between the procedural needs that we need to make in FTA as well as FHWA, because they do differ somewhat. As far as funding for the project is concerned, there's actually two very distinct and different portions of that we need
Mr.
to
Chair?
Consider.
Yes, sir, sir.
Thank you. I apologize for interrupting again. But the question, Federal Transit Administration is part of the co-sponsor team. If you weren't talking about putting on a light rail, would they still be part of the team?
Chair Metzger, Senator Starr, if the answer to that question is, as you just ask it, is yes. Let me just clarify that a little bit. Whatever high occupancy choice, whether it's bus rapid or light rail that we choose, we will look to the FTA for some funding through what's called their New Starts program. Were we not to put high occupancy transit on the bridge and make it a highway only project, would be the case where FTA would not be involved. But as it is, by having that option on there, we're actually able to avail ourselves of another source of funding.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator George.
If I can follow that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the question I guess I have is that in all the interviews I've done on the light rail, it seems like the way the system's set up right now, and heavy rail is a different issue, but light rail, the capacity is about 3,000 people per hour across any one set of tracks, which means it'd be a bottleneck at that point. So do we still qualify for the high occupancy transit funds with just an express lane bus? Just with express lane buses with that kind of transit, and not talking about the additional cost of light rail, do we still qualify for those new pots of federal funds?
Senator George, Chair Metzger, yes, we do believe that there are scenarios under a bus, what's termed as a bus rapid transit system, that would meet the qualifications to be eligible for that funding, as well as the light rail. The trade-offs between the bus or the light rail alternatives we propose would be addressed in the next phase of the study. That's what staff has recommended, that we take both alternatives, both the bus and the light rail alternatives, in so that we give fair shake in process wise to both alternatives, because there is the feeling from some of the good folks in Washington that perhaps a bus alternative could meet their needs better than what light rail would. So in order for us to fully evaluate that and to put the facts on the table, our recommendation is to take both alternatives forward in the next phase, and it is our belief that both would qualify for funding.
If I could just stress, thank you, Mr. Chair, if I could just stress, at least from my perspective, obviously I'm very much interested in this project, but I'd really urge staff to look at capacity per hour and then the cost effectiveness of that, because I just don't want to start spending a lot of staff time on an alternative which may work great inside of an urban area. When you talk about a bottleneck like a bridge, I just don't, if I could urge staff to really look at the capacity per hour, because I hate to create, to put all of our eggs in a transit mode that only allows 3,000 people per hour across that one point, because it's such a small number and the cost is going to be so huge. I'd sure urge staff to look at that bus system as a way to get more people across that bridge.
Yep.
Okay, great. Thank you. We will.
Go ahead.
Okay. With regards to the funding on the project itself, the two phases essentially are what does it take to complete the current phase that we are in, being the environmental document phase, and then the second piece being what does it take us to complete the final engineering and to construct the project itself. Traditionally, 3 to 5% of the costs of what the total construction would be what we would do for, what we would figure for a project like this. At first blush, just based on the wide range of alternatives that we developed out there, the back of an envelope sort of with very little engineering work done, and some of the major risks identified, is about $2 to $6 billion. So with that, we have earmarked, if you will, for the project approximately $74 million to complete this phase of the work, most of that which has been contributed by the state of Washington.
Can I interrupt just for a moment on that? I know our project is, our commitment is equality at the end of the day, and I know the legislature of Washington, because you know, we're meeting with them tomorrow, if we're going to hear about this, I want to know about it, has made a big commitment up front to the EIS money, and so at this stage of the horse race, you know, we're significantly behind in terms of our commitment, and I just kind of wonder, from your perspective, if any knowledge that we should have about that, is there angst about this, is this everybody happy about that, do we need to be stepping up a little sooner on some of this?
Chair Metzger, from my experience on the project level and the working with the good folks in WSDOT every day, I don't think this is a large issue from at least the DOT perspective. I think that quite candidly, we figure that we know where each other lives. We've done lots of projects across the river between the two states in the past, and we have a great working relationship with them. We do We do hear occasionally from folks that there's a perception that, you know, Oregon hasn't contributed as much, but I also hear that there's not a problem from participation-wise, and folks are very, very okay with the situation. I haven't heard anything different.
And Senator Metzger, when we hear that, I've not heard it from, as John said, from the Washington Department of Transportation staff. I have not dealt with their legislature, but none of their staff has told me it's an issue with the legislature. And when other people bring that up, we remind them that Oregon was first at the table with the funding, that the Washington funding came about as a result, relatively recently, as a result of their increase in revenues, but we were actually the ones that were ahead early on in the project.
Mr. Chair,
yes,
just a follow-up on that. I would assume, since Washington has twice as many people, that their transportation budget is maybe twice as much as ours, three times as much as ours.
Chairman Metzger, Senator Mona Sanderson, it's not twice as much. I
meant total for the whole state.
I don't know that that's the case. I'm pretty sure their budget's not twice as large as ours, but I'll go back and we'll find that out. It's probably somewhat larger because they have this.
Just follow up. When we're talking about equity, I know Portland is quite a bit larger than Vancouver. Again, I don't know. When we're talking about equity, should we be talking about whether Oregonians use the bridge or Washingtonians use the bridge? I hope we wouldn't go that route.
Chairman Metzger, Senator Mona Sanderson, I have not actually heard that issue raised. The 50-50 split on bridges crossing the Columbia between Oregon and Washington is a really long-standing split. It's existed on every single bridge over there, and all of our operational costs are split right down the middle. I'm not considered it. I just assumed that we would continue with that long-standing arrangement, and we haven't had discussions otherwise.
Thank you.
Ms. Atkins had a comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to point out, and probably the committee knows this, that the Washington Transportation Committee is also their budget committee. It's a 17-member committee. Only five or six of them will be down tomorrow, and I think couple of those members are not on the Transportation Committee. But that they may be more involved with members on projects for that reason.
We'll find out tomorrow. Go ahead and allow you to finish, sir.
Well, I think essentially I was about there in that really my comment was that although it's a bit tight with what we have committed to the project, we believe that we can get through the environmental impact phase with what we have committed to the project. And our focus, I think, really needs to be at this point, how is it that we go about making sure that we secure funds when we need them through all of our efforts to come up to be able to build the project and move into the next phase.
Thank you. I had a question maybe to give either of you or both your candid observations. As you know, we'll be meeting tomorrow with folks. We may have some opportunity for some public testimony after we have presentations, and so that our committee is prepared and maybe have some discussions prior to that. We're going to be talking about process tomorrow so that we're kind of both understanding what the process is and how we're going with that. I suspect we may hear from some of our Washington counterparts in the Clark County area there who may have some concerns about how that process has worked and considerations by some of the members of the task force. If you could just enlighten us as to your view in terms of how that has worked, what issues that you see in terms of people feeling left in, left out, because we're going to hear about them tomorrow, and I'd just soon hear about them today first.
And just a follow-up, too, so they can have a – I've actually had a legislator from Washington calling me regarding process, and they were hoping that the people like you are talking rather than legislators talking to legislators. So,
well,
there must be some dynamic going on that I'm not aware of.
Chair Metzger and members of the committee, let me start and we'll have John chime in. Let me go to Senator Montes Anderson's question first. It's sort of interesting that if we're talking across the border, if you will, I actually know the people on the WSDOT side of this project better than I know the people on the ODOT side. I've known my counterpart in Washington for over 20 years. I graduated from college with the Washington Department of Transportation Chief of Staff. And the now region manager in
You're married to that one, right?
And the now region manager in Southwest Washington was one of the first people I met when I went to work for ODOT 28 years ago. So I don't believe there's any communication issue in terms of us talking at the staff level. To Senator Metzger's question, on any big project, there's people that have differences of opinion. And John talked about, Mr. Osborne talked about when we did the purpose and need, which is the foundation for the environmental document, the 39 people on the task force, and all 39 people voted in favor of that purpose and need. There are pockets. If we have a public hearing tomorrow, you will hear from a vocal and what we believe from all of the outreach we've done. We've done multiple open houses. We believe to be a minority, but very vocal that don't want this project to go forward or don't want it to go forward in the current form that it's in. And the pushback I've heard are from some citizen groups on the Oregon side of the river and from Clark County on the Washington side of the river. The city of Vancouver has been very supportive of this project, and the folks on our side of the river have been supportive of the project as well in terms of the key stakeholders. But you could, based on what's happened at public hearings in the past, you could expect fairly extensive testimony from, again, what we believe, based on all of the research that we've done, to be a minority of people that would express concerns about the direction of this project.
Sparking some questions. Senator Starr.
Thank you. That's pretty obscure. What's the problem? What's the complaints?
Chair Metzger, Senator Starr, it's kind of all over the map.
Can you categorize in the top three?
Well, I'll try. Some of the concern comes really back from when I-5 was built in the first place, where you took a swath right through the middle of a neighborhood, and some people still have, I believe, harbor concerns about the fact that I-5 cuts where it cuts through in North Portland, just separates two neighborhoods. Another concern you'll hear is that we are not putting the bridge is not going in the right place. It should go to the west or it should go to the east of where the current crossing is. While there's probably a valid need for a third bridge or another crossing, it doesn't really solve the problem, that, at least as we analyze it. So that would be another key element of concern. And then finally, the last one is this is a whole bunch of money. And should we really be investing this much money in a capital highway project, or should we be looking at alternatives in terms of different forms of land use and different strategies to, rather than build more capacity, reduce the number of vehicles? So, John, did I get the top three probably?
Yeah, I think you hit them just right, Doug.
Senator George.
Yeah, I actually, Senator Starr sort of asked my first question, but your comment raised a second question. As I understood this project, and this maybe shows my newness to the committee, but as I understood this project, this was a third crossing, but now as I've started to hear some additional things, as the project is being proposed now, it's replacing the bridge, and we would take out the existing bridge, so we would lose that capacity. When we'd spend the $2 to $6 billion, and we would lose the existing bridge, and we wouldn't be adding a third bridge. This is just ripping out and putting in a new one.
Chair Metzger, Senator George, that's the recommendation that went forward that the task force will consider. A lot of people are still talking about leaving at least one of the other two bridges in. The reasons that those bridges now are would be under the recommendation would be removed is twofold. One, it's hard to hook them up at the other side of on either side of the river. You're going to change I-5, which means you've got to build an entirely different street support structure for those existing bridges. And there's no way to hook them all into I-5. And secondly, it doesn't solve the river problem where you've got a whole bunch of piers in the river. And, in fact, you have to make what I've heard referred to as the Portland S, where you go through the railroad bridge, which is a swing span on the north side of the river, and you, in a very short distance, have to get to the south side of the river to go underneath. If you're a high boat, you have to get to the south side of the river to go under the lift span in Oregon. So if you leave the bridges in, those would be the concerns. And there's extensive financial analysis on the benefits. And we could we can spend a half an hour going through all of the analysis that led the project team to that recommendation. But the recommendation now is for a replacement bridge called a mid-level bridge with no lift span in it and fewer piers, and the removal of the two existing bridges.
If I could, I got to tell you where we're all going to take a lot of heat is the idea that we're going to spend $2 to $6 billion and take out existing infrastructure. So if there's any way that you guys can supply for us the rationale on that, that would at least be helpful for me to read, because that seems pretty radical. And so I just, as a thought process, it would help me to sort of understand a little better. So any kind of background would be helpful.
We have that.
Okay, great.
Well, glad to provide it to you.
I don't know if that shocks anybody else, but it's
before we go to Senator Starr, and one thing is, it's really helpful when we, and hopefully we'll have some visuals tomorrow for those of us seeing this, is one of the real issues, as I think Mr. Tindall pointed out, in terms of his alignment, because if you're going to move this thing, and you're going right into downtown Vancouver here, mm-hmm. that's where this is, and so you're going to have to make a lot of changes, then how would this all come together? I mean, you're moving the thing, and you're going to have the issues with the community about where this is going to be, and then how would you tie them all back together again? And that's, if you see it, you have a better understanding of why it's a problem than conceptually. But as Senator George pointed out, constituents are conceptual. They don't have the visual to see that.
Yeah. I couldn't see one of those things where people are going to go, you're going to spend $6 billion and rip that out? Great. You know, I mean, that's what we're going to face.
Senator Starter.
Thank you. I understand the issue with having to remove the existing bridge, and we do have to be able to explain that story. So I agree with Senator George, but we're going to rip out 6 lanes that don't work very well and replace it with 10 to 12 lanes, is my understanding, so that you include lanes for folks that are going to exit right after the bridge, really. And that's what you have now, is the weaving of, right. of folks trying to cross the bridge and then exit in Jansen Beach, or exit it onto
SR-14
on the Washington side,
and all the way up to SR-500.
So it's pretty tough. It doesn't work well at all the way it is now, and the bridges are old and they're expensive, and it doesn't work for river traffic. So I understand that. My problem with the whole thing, part of my problem, is the lack of will from, and I don't put this at the department's feet, but at the commission level, the lack of the commission to consider the Innovative Partnerships Program for this bridge. From my perspective, part of the benefits of the PPP process is the early part of a project, and the ability the ability of a private sector to move a lot quicker than perhaps the public sector does, and recoup costs in the short run for the long term, and so I'm frustrated that we provided the department and the commission that tool. My understanding is that the commission level, they basically said, okay, we'll do PPPs and for everything, except we would not or will not consider a PPP for CRC. Don't bother big, multi-billion dollar companies that build stuff all over the world. Don't bother dropping a proposal in our laps to give us an idea of how you would pursue building or rebuilding the Columbia River Crossing, because we're not interested in talking to you. When that flies in the face of what this legislature did 2 sessions ago in passing the law, changing the law, creating the opportunity to have the department consider that, and my understanding that the state of Washington legislature as well passed complementary legislation in their state that would allow those kinds of conversations to occur as well. So I probably should have had this question presented to Stuart Foster when he was sitting in front of us, but we're talking about the project now. So that's, from my perspective, a very disappointing way that this project is moving forward. I have nothing but respect for all the people that are working on it and all of that as far as people that are doing their jobs, but I think we missed an opportunity, especially when you look at how difficult PPPs are to do, difficult they are to create a project that will fund itself. This one clearly will. Senator George is dealing with the project in his district that's running into trouble funding itself as a PPP. So I don't know that there's a question in there, but if you want to make a comment, that would be fine.
Well, Senator Metzger, or Chairman Metzger, Senator Starr, the commission took the action they took to make sure that we're in sync with WSDOT and the public-private. And I guess I don't think this is off the table in any way for a public-private partnership. The environmental work needs to be done before we get there. And in fact, if you look at Newburgh-Dundee, bringing in a private partner, they don't do the environmental work. The environmental work still is the basis of ODOT. And so we are doing the environmental work. And we would do the environmental work anyway. But in my discussions with the WSDOT staff, public-private is not in any way off the table for this project.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't want to debate you, but having going through all of the alternative discussion, basically you're narrowing what the project's going to look like before you then turn it over to a private sector, where I would suggest that you bring the private sector in at the front end and then working together through the environmental. Clearly, the public role is to do that environmental, but you can do that in partnership with the private sector, and you're not limiting at the end of the day what the private sector is going to be able to deliver. I think that we as a state, as states, potentially have shut doors and options because we haven't invited the private sector to the table early and seen what kinds of thoughts that they have. Mr. Chair, I appreciate your consideration here, but I've traveled in other states where the department had this grand idea about building a new freeway with interchanges and all these kinds of things, and they let the private sector make suggestions, and by golly, they were able to not only deliver what the department thought they could deliver, but a whole lot more. So I think that's my frustration with it. I think that we lost that opportunity. We're going to move forward. The bridge is going to get built. Likely will be a PPP at one point. Clearly it's going to be funded with tolls, at least a significant portion of it will be. So those are my thoughts.
Okay.
Thank you, Senator Starr. Any other questions? Senator George and Senator Monsanders.
I just want to – thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to follow up. So the Union Pacific or whatever that rail line that goes across, is that bridge also going to be taken out then? When you said the second bridge will be taken out, I didn't quite understand that. What's the other bridge that would be considered?
Chair Metzger, Senator George, has two bridges. There's one southbound bridge, one northbound bridge on I-5. That's actually Burlington Northern Santa Fe bridge, and it will remain.
It will remain there. Okay, so we'll still have that freight traffic across.
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. I'm sorry, I just misunderstood that conversation.
Senator Monsanto.
And in the design, this is the first time I've seen these pictures, or at least where it registered. There still is no way that you can just keep that third one for I don't know what kind of traffic. I mean, the existing ones, the two, with that going around.
Chair Metzger, Senator Montes Anderson, again, keeping the bridge is actually more expensive than taking it down. And you have all the connection issues and who's going to own the bridge. And it's another, as I suggested to Senator George, we'd be glad to come down and walk you through it. But it's not an intuitive answer. But based on all of the analysis I've seen, it is an in-depth analysis that got to that recommendation. So there are a number of reasons, and we're glad to work with you to explain all of that.
Well, like I think you said, we get the questions from our constituents.
We will have, Chair Metzger, Senator Montes Anderson, we'll try and have something for you tomorrow with some talking points about those other options and why, in a little bit more concise way, why they are not so on the table.
Right. Thank you very much. Well, we're very much looking forward to tomorrow. And, you know, just to be clear, and we'll make this, I know, again tomorrow, but also now, is that the whole reason we're getting together with Washington because is that we are really committed, I believe, as a legislature to having the proper infrastructure in place for our economies of our states, our respective states, and we want to be a supportive partner. And so part of that is our responsibility is to engage in this process, like some of the questions, so that we can be a supportive partner and also know what our what we can do to help and also provide direction to make sure it works correctly and that we can respond affirmatively to our constituents who obviously we need the public support to move this thing through. And so there's kind of a partnership that we have, and we're all very, very interested in seeing a successful conclusion to this project. So tomorrow, 11:30, Port of Port and Billy. Just to give you a heads up for next week a little bit, if you looked at the schedule, we're going to have our transportation meeting a week from today, I believe it is. It's a public hearing on the Real ID Act. So you might prepare for that. We also have a week from Monday, we're going to bring back the Enterprise Zone bill, and that was because we were waiting for that Portland State study on urban renewal that the special districts had asked, and you should all have now received that study. So the idea is to give you some time to look at it for questions and just kind of a preview.
Mr. Chair, if I could. I do have some amendments proposed for that, but I'm waiting around the Legislative Council. I think I've discussed with all the members here. I have not discussed them with Senator Deckert yet.
Right.
And I have met with a lot of the local government representatives. They're just a thought piece at this point, and so hopefully I'll get those out of the Legislative Council soon.
Sure, and just work with Janet. I need delivering those. Janet, any questions before we adjourn?
No, Mr. Chair. I don't have
any. Okay. All right. Thank you all very much. We'll see you tomorrow. We're adjourned.